episode 17 is here. It's time.
By the way, I think I have a title for this episode.
What's the title?
Mezcal and Mayhem.
Wow. We're drinking mayhem? I mean, we're drinking mezcal?
Yes. We're going to drink mezcal, and then we're going to make mayhem.
We're mayhem makers?
Yeah. Do you know how to make it?
No. It sounds like a good cocktail, though.
It is. It's two parts mezcal.
Yes.
It's a squeeze of lime.
Yes.
You rim the glass with some dried habanero.
You got me on the habanero. I can't do that. Wow. Sorry.
I said mayhem.
You did say mayhem. All right, guys. We are here for What We Watch, When We Drink, episode 17. We haven't been together for quite a while, so we got to catch up on some TV watching, TV talk. And tonight, we are actually going to highlight some mezcals, correct?
Yes, but hold on. Wait, yes. Hold that thought.
Hold
Let's
it.
Roll the intro. Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a booze dancing media podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy libations. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And you could find us on boozedancing.com. And if you'd like, by all means, please email us with your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. And we will definitely get back to you. And you could, kind of ease up on the cease and desist letters and the ransom letters. We're kind of backed up on those. And we're running out of cash.
The P.O. box is getting a little full.
Please. I got a letter from the FBI the other day. They're asking questions, and I don't like questions.
If you were a little nicer, maybe your neighbors wouldn't have turned you in.
I guess. Are you saying you turned me in?
I'm a neighbor. Just saying.
We are here together for a little TV talk, as usual, on our 17th episode. You know why I like number 17? It's a prime number. Just thought I'd throw that out there for all the prime number nerds out there. So before we get too far into the TV talk, we can mention what we are highlighting tonight on the on our drinking part, which is a mezcal from our friends who are importing it, Impex Beverages, correct?
That is correct. It is called, what is it called? Mal de Amor.
That's nice.
Mezcal?
Amor means love.
But mal means bad. Bad love.
Mezcal is kind of a bad love.
You know what it's like? It sounds like it's a making of like a David Lynch movie from like the mid-90s.
Mal de Amor.
We're a mid-80s hair band.
You know what? You should run this by your better half, Mike. You know, maybe it was like an album by Rat.
Yeah, she probably know.
She a big hair bander?
She Cinderella? Probably was on the tour. She was probably on the Warren? Band Love tour.
Britney Fox? You go all night. Yep. Quite right.
Or maybe it's like a riff on a Bon Jovi song. You give love a bad name.
Maybe this is from a hair band in Mexico doing Bon Jovi songs.
It's a possibility.
A Mexican Bon Jovi cover band.
Playing in Guadalajara on Saturday, Tuesday nights. Open mic night.
Bon Jovi tribute.
That's funny. So, yeah, so we've got Mal de Amor. Shall I read a little bit about it from the Impact site?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Okay, Mal de Amor is located in Santiago, Matatlan, Oaxaca, Mexico, and is completely family-owned. It is not just a distillery. On the grounds, the Hernandez family runs an authentic Oaxacan-style restaurant on the main road departing Oaxaca Centro. The agave used for production at Mal de Amor comes from a variety of different lands in Oaxaca, which allows for a rich diversity in expressions to include different terroirs. Portions of the family-owned land is used to maintain the sustainability of agave for future generations. The maestro mezcalero is Armando Hernandez. Armando is a third-generation maestro mezcalero. He grew up making mezcal with his father, learning the techniques handed down from his grandfather, Armando, and his family are native Oaxacan people known as Zapotec. The agave is crushed by a horse-pulled tahona after being slow-roasted underground for 4 to 5 days. Fermentation is done with wild yeast in open air, completely natural fermentation, in parentheses, which takes between 5 to 10 days. Stills around 250 liters and are heated by direct fire. Everything is double distilled, copper pot distillation, then rested in glass anywhere from 6 months to 4 years. This allows for the flavors to really come out after settling. Mal de Amor is a sustainable, responsible brand and pleased to share their passion and family legacy with the United States.
Pretty cool.
Sounds delightful.
It does. One of my favorite things about mezcal is that they do the open air fermentation. They're just getting wild yeast from the air. They're not like getting big bags from, you know, some industrial yeast producer. It's all just whatever's in the air. That's cool.
Wow, that's cool. That is very cool.
Yes.
You've acquired a taste for mezcal over the years.
I have. I really do like it. I'm not an aficionado by any means, but I do like it. Well, and I do like it more than a tequila.
You're an aficionado, but you're not an expert.
Correct.
Mike, how are you on the mezcal? I know you're a little scared of the mezcal, aren't you?
Don't be scared, Mike.
Yeah.
But
I was scared of a lot of things, though? And you dragged me kicking and screaming. It's only all the kids are doing it, so I succumbed.
That's right.
Are we going to crack one of these open? Start our evening off?
Yeah, so the range is, the ABV range is 45. We have three different ones. 45, there's one that's 46.5, and then there is one that is 48. So I say we go low to high.
Okay. That's fine.
So I mean, it's not going crazy. It's not going to be like 60% or anything, but still, you know.
This is the Sierra Negra, correct?
I have the Mal de Amor Sierra Negra Mezcal. It's crystal clear.
It's rusted in glass, not rusted in any kind of, matured in any kind of wood.
A little clinky, a little cheers.
Ooh, I think that's a great idea.
What do they say in Spain? What do they say in Mexico for like cheers? What's the...
Cheers?
Salud?
Salud! Yeah, salud. It's salud.
Salud? Salud, boys.
That was nice.
Very nice.
Well, the nose, I'm just getting rubber and fuel.
Are you?
It smells like a NASCAR race.
Oh, I don't know, man. See, I think what I like about this stuff is it's got a bit of a... It's got that sort of smokiness to it.
So, you hear that a lot, is that if you're a Scotch drinker, you're going to like mezcal because of the smoky quality to it. I don't always get a whole lot of smoke from mezcal. Sometimes. It's not like, to me, they're different animals, and it's not like drinking Lafroy or something that's...
Oh, well, no.
But you don't get... It's not even in the same world. There's hints of smoke.
And that comes from what? Roasting the agave? Is that what it is? Like you roast the malts? You roast the agave?
Yes. And you're right, Mike. There isn't a... To this one, at least, there's a lot of a petroleum to it. It's a little bit oily smelling.
But you gotta, you know, you push past, and then you start to pick up a little bit of the fruit.
It's got like a very herbally quality to it, too.
Very herbally.
Like, there's maybe like a little bit of licorice.
There's almost a gin quality to it, a botanical quality.
Yeah, I think I'm getting some florals. I could see that.
Ooh.
It smells. I like the smell.
I went in. It's delicious.
Boy, Aaron went in and his eyes popped out of his head. That's good.
So then when I taste this, then I do think of scotch. And I go back to my favorite scotch. It has a bit of Kalila-ness to it. There's a sweetness to it and a smokiness to it.
Yeah, on the back end, you get both of them together.
Yes.
You get like that smoky flavor as well as some of the sugars come through.
I love that sweetness.
That's very, very nice. Wow. It's like a smoked vanilla.
Yeah.
Maybe like a charry vanilla.
I'm curious what the smoking process of the piñas is. Not the actual application, not how they're doing it, but the actual smell. I wonder if there's any connection between that smell around the distillery and what we're smelling here. I wonder if you can kind of connect the two. Because there isn't completely a connection even when you smell peat being smoked and actual peated whiskey. It's not exactly a one-to-one ratio, right?
I don't know. I've never been to the distillery, so I wouldn't know, Mr. Gloater.
I also wonder what they're using as the fire base for the smoking when they take the agave. Well, what kind of wood? You know, is it wood? Is it charcoal? Is it something that's going to impart some notes into it that if you did it in a different process, it would taste totally different?
That would make an excellent old-fashioned.
Oh, yeah. That'd be nice.
Oh, my gosh. That's
a little sugar. Put a little sugar in there.
That's great.
A little maybe. Would you use orange peel or would you go with like maybe like a lime peel?
I'd probably go orange to start. And nothing crazy on the bitters. Don't go too out of the ordinary.
Oh, what if you took some grilled pineapple and put it in the old fashioned?
That'd be good.
You know, maybe put a little brown sugar on the pineapple and just kind of let that go in there?
He just said don't go too crazy. And you suddenly go,
that's not crazy.
Wasn't me,
that's
it was
not
him.
Crazy.
Wasn't me, it was
totally
him.
Totally crazy.
You know,
don't go crazy.
You know, Mike, you used to be.
Mike, you forgot the name of this episode.
What happened?
Mezcal and mayhem.
Mayhem, bro. Mayhem.
Boy.
Mezcal and chaos doesn't sound very good. Mezcal and mayhem. Boom.
No, it's control and chaos. They're two different things.
Well, since we've been in Mexico here for a small amount of time, I thought we would start off talking about something international on our journey, TV journey. Has anyone been watching the Olympics at all?
Last night was the first night I actually sat down and watched any of it.
Are they on the Olympics? I didn't know. I haven't seen.
They might be.
My daughter is obsessed. She comes back from college, and now we watch the Olympics on four channels almost 24/7.
It's insane. Every 4 years, you hear this clarion call of, oh my God, there's too many channels. I can't find where to watch all this stuff. It's like it's a new thing. It happens every 4 years. Actually, it happens every 2 years because of the Winter Olympics, too.
Winter, summer, yeah.
It is complicated and confusing, and if you watch it in the morning versus watching any... You look at your phone and you find out Simone Biles is out, and then you can watch it tape delayed 12 hours later at dinner time, and she's out. What happened?
Spoiler alert.
Now, do you have a favorite sport you like to watch?
It's hard for me not to watch basketball, but I'm actually kind of bored a little bit this year with basketball. I kind of like stop into a lot of little things and never stay too long to anything. I don't kind of last through much. You know, the first half is all the, you know, the gymnastic stuff and swimming. And then you get the second half's all the track and field. They both have their pluses and minuses. I don't know that I have a favorite. How about you guys?
I like the track and field. That last night I got sucked in. I watched a couple hours of track and field. That was kind of fun. But other than that, I'm like, I'm kind of over the gymnastics. The swimming doesn't really do it for me. Although they did have some pretty cool camera angles. I like you can't really see anything. You know, all you see is a bunch of splashing.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you could see who's ahead and who's not, but just to see, like, the technique, the form, when they're just above the water, you can't see anything.
Watching when you were a kid and there was, like, one camera.
Yeah.
And now you've got drones and you've got things flying on cables and there's a camera following along at the same speed as the racers along the side of the pool or on the track. It's amazing the technology where it's come.
Can you imagine the insurance policy for all those cameras and equipment that's flying around?
Well, can you imagine the amount of money they're making on ad revenue?
Well, they're not making it on spectators, right?
Well, the kids were watching it, and they said there's 2.5 minutes of show, 2.5 minutes of commercial, 2.5 minutes of show, 2.5 minutes of commercial. And the cutaways are all ads because they're spending, I don't know, $1 billion or whatever it is they bid to get the Olympics, and they got to get their money back.
I get it. I mean, it's, you know, if you still have an antenna, you can watch this for free, basically.
Yeah, but you're not going to see much for free anymore. I mean, you'll see the NBC coverage is the most high-profile stuff on a tape delay version. You're bouncing around between so many channels. It's crazy. I mean, what's it? CNBC, NBC Sports Channel, the Olympic Channel, and just NBC. Yeah.
Right.
It's all over the place.
How about you, Mike?
The kids have basically looked at swimming and said, okay, that's great. And gymnastics is, that's interesting. I'll watch the finals. But they've been flipping on all the obscure, not to belittle a sport, but it's somewhat obscure to me, where they had archery on today. We were watching the bronze medal and the gold medal archery competition between countries that we don't have a vested interest in. Like, okay, sure, let's watch this. And they were watching a good amount of the shooting because they were fascinated by the skeets and everything else, the air pistol and all the other stuff they were doing. And I think that'll probably continue. And if you ever watch badminton, it is not the way
badminton.
I've never played badminton like that. It is insane.
Yeah.
Just insane.
Yeah. And table
I watched
tennis
the mixed
too.
Doubles last night.
It's insane.
And I so recall watching so many of these smaller sports, obscure sports, on Wild World of Sports when we were kids. Yeah. And it was just amazing watching, table tennis or badminton or all these things.
Yeah.
It's crazy, and in other countries, these things are just massive. Here, there's a small following.
You know what the best thing about badminton is?
What?
What?
The shuttlecock.
You just like to say that, right?
It's fun to say. And I liked that there was the one swimmer, her name was Titmus, and then there was another runner. I forget what the name.
Australian, I think.
Australian, right? And there was another one that had like a funky name, like, I don't know, like Cockney. Or something like that. I can't remember.
It just makes you giggle, doesn't it?
I'm like, what the hell? It was just funny.
You're like a sixth grade boy, aren't you? You're just a sixth grader trapped in there, aren't you?
By the way, you kind of upped the ante on me. I was thinking more kindergarten, but that's okay.
The other thing that we were watching last night, they had the kayaking on. And it was interesting to see because it's all man-made. Basically like building a lazy river and then agitating it to the point that you could actually get rapids out of it. and they have these massive, I guess, back funnels or filters that are throwing this water down at a ridiculous rate. It was really something to watch because they're going down this completely man-made thing. When they pull back, it looks like a lazy river. It's like, hey, I was on one of those. I don't remember my inner tube moving quite the way those kayaks are, but maybe that was me. I lacked the technique.
That's so funny. You've got this, you got the core sports, right?
Yeah.
Your track and field and swimming. And then there's those other ones that are all like this, like the badmintons and the table tennis and canoeing. And then there's always at the very end, there's on the extremes, there's these sports that kind of rotate in and out every 4 years. Oh, we're going to stop having, I don't know, whatever. Baseball was out for a while. Baseball's back. Now there's 3-on-3 basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that, and that was
weird.
And
there's all the, you know, there's always some weird thing that they are, you know, trying to market to more people and something more. It's not like they bring it up just for the Olympics. It's been going on for a while, right? So they have to have, like, qualifying stuff to get to the Olympics. So it's not like they just came up with the idea a couple weeks ago. There's 3-on-3 basketball tournaments or, you know, national, international competition for a while. Who knew?
Well, it almost looks like they took some X Games sports.
Yeah. Yes.
And put those in the mix.
BMX
between the BMX.
Stuff. Yeah.
Right, the BMX, the surfboards.
Yep.
Now they've got they got skateboarding.
Yep.
You know, they got all this crazy stuff. I'm like,
well,
what is going on?
I mean, I think it's all about getting those young eyeballs on the screen, right?
I guess.
Not us. They don't care about us anymore.
Well, that's okay. I don't care about them anymore.
Hey.
Take it.
You're spitting on Jim McKay's grave. I don't like that.
No. Well, Jim McKay's gone. I miss Jim McKay. He was great.
Well, it's funny seeing all of the announcers, too, because you see them all across the NBC spectrum, right? So Catherine Tappan, who has been hosting hockey, now she's hosting the Olympics. And Mike Tirico, which we knew from ESPN, is now hosting, is like the main host instead of Bob Costas. Time marches on. Faces change. How are we liking our mezcal?
That was good.
It was good.
It is good, isn't it?
That was delish.
I actually poured a little bit more. It's very good.
I'm going to have a little more, too.
All right, guys. Let's get into regular television. What have we watched? What have we gotten through since we last talked? Michael?
I am deep into Doom Patrol, which is running parallel with Titans on the DC Universe. And this is like three seasons are out. A third season's about to start. So we're trying to catch up on this before the next season begins. And they kind of overlap a little bit with Titans. So my son is like, well, we watched Scarlet Witch and we watched The Winter Soldier and Falcon. And now we watched Loki. So let's watch this again just to make sure we're done with it. We can move on. We finished Loki, which I thought was really well done. And now we're watching this Doom Patrol. I liked Loki.
I gave up on it. So I maybe need
to
go back.
It's a little out there. And it's like the British version of Short, where it's, you know, 6 episodes or whatever it was. And we're done. Like, wait, I didn't understand. I need more. You know, when the American versions, it's like long backstory short for everything.
Okay.
I thought they did a very good job of casting and keeping the characters kind of fresh. And they had a little bit of a cartoonish version where Loki's been a character for so many years and it's been covered in all these different cartoons. So they had like an old age Loki in a ridiculous costume. And then they had Loki, if he were African-American, and then they had Loki as a small kid, and it was interesting how they had all the different Lokis in there, which was kind of interesting. And they're doing all this multiverse stuff where Doctor Strange is going to be the Multiverse of Madness, and they're going to do they already did the Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse. So they had to kind of bring all these characters together and show how it would have been in different timelines or time streams. And I think a lot of this is going to play through in the next Doctor Strange and in the next Spider-Man movie.
Before we go too far, any opinion on the Scarlett Johansson lawsuit? Do we know about that?
When you first look at it and you see, well, Disney, you're still kind of suffering from the COVID and the pandemic and the lockdown, and it becomes one of these, well, we're trying to open it up to more people. And as an outsider, that's great. I can watch it for $30 and have a watch party in the house, and I don't have to go to the movies if I'm too scared to go to the movies or I don't feel comfortable. But you don't think about, well, if I'm getting back-end points on the total sale, you screwed me by doing this. You know, if I'm Scarlett Johansson and I was going to get 10 points or something on the back end, how am I getting my back-end points on this, you know?
But that was strictly box office?
I believe
it
is.
Worded?
And that's the concern, is that they're only getting it for
that's
it.
The question.
So I read something today, and they said they're waiting to see what Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson do, and what she was just in the Cruella de Vil. What they're going to do if the same
Emma Stone.
The same thing happens. They already did this with Cruella de Vil, and they're wondering, like, if you gave her points,
okay,
you just took money out of her pocket. You gotta make these people whole. Black Widow went from being the number one movie in the world at $80 million or something like that to being like the eighth biggest movie. And the following week, I think the movie made like $10 million bucks. Where like that should have dropped off to like maybe $40 to $60 million and dropped off a little bit after that, not dropped off a cliff. And that's all money out of her pocket, which I can't blame her for wanting to sue. I just don't know where you go from there.
Some of these contracts were done long ago, right? Pre-pandemic, pre-change of the model. This could rearrange things again on how contracts are written, on how points are paid. And now that we've got this whole thing about putting movies out at the same time as they're being released to the theaters, it's a whole different world.
It's like when TV went into syndication.
So it's going to change contracts.
You know, and I didn't have any syndication written into the contract. So I only got paid per episode, and now it's been syndicated, and I haven't seen a dime in years. You know, like, well, they say that the cast of Friends never has to work again. You know, Seinfeld never has to work again. They can if they want to, but Seinfeld, they never have to, because the syndication money is going to keep rolling in forever.
Anything else, Mike, that you watched?
I don't think there was too much else. Did? How about you, Ange?
I got a relatively long list here.
That you got through all the way, maybe?
Yeah, I finished up Lupin Part 2. That was a relatively quick watch. Good. Oh, that was great. I love that show. Mike, you really got to give it a shot.
I got to give it a shot.
I know it's in French. But I think the boys would like it. I mean, Marco loved it. We both watched it together.
It's actually good.
So
family
you would liken it to like a Thomas Crown meets James Bond kind of a thing. Is that still how the second part carried through?
Similar no, you know, it's more of like an Ocean's 11 kind of thing. But instead of 11, there's like three. You know, it's just really well done. It's pretty tight. I mean, it's ludicrous like all these shows are, but it's just fun. I mean, he's just doing like five different kind of cons at the same time. You know, and it's he's always like three steps ahead.
You know, I wouldn't say it's fun like, what was that show with GVC Rabani?
Oh, like Sneaky Pete? Giovanni Ribisi?
It's not fun that way, where that there actually is there's a fair amount of humor. There's not a lot of humor in Lupin. It's pretty serious. You know, it's almost like a spy thriller. There's not a lot of laughing. It's pretty, you know, it's a thriller. So, but
it's not bleak by any
stretch. No, it's not bleak.
It's more of a thriller. It's good. I think there's like, you know, he's got a playful quality to him in a way.
He does. Yeah, he does.
So it's good. The guy's great. I mean, the guy has so much charisma. It's ridiculous. He's just really, really good. So I think it's worth watching. I think it's a lot of fun. I watched that. Remember that show Betty I was talking about the skateboarding girls in New York?
Guys. Yeah, yeah.
I finished the first two seasons are done, and then there was a movie that the show was based on called Skate Kitchen.
Was that Netflix?
Betty is on HBO Max and HBO. Skate Kitchen is available on Hulu. And Skate Kitchen was, they said it was a documentary, but it felt more like kind of a really loose documentary. Like all the girls in it are not professional actors. Mm-hmm. And they're you know, real skateboarders. You know, they're doing their own stunts. They're doing all their own stuff. There's no, like, stuntmen or anything. But it's really well done. Right. The second season of Betty wasn't as good as the first. I think you just get a little diminishing returns because after a while, once you get the core story out of the way, then things kind of go a little off the rails.
Yeah.
You know, then, like, the ridiculous plot lines start. So, but it was good. It was really good. And the second season was apparently shot all during COVID. So, you know, there's mask wearing and all the stuff So they kind of bring it in. I like the characters, and some of the skate scenes are just so hypnotic. I never really had any interest in skateboarding, and I'm still not in actually doing it. But watching it, I see the appeal. Like, there's scenes where they're just, like, the streets are empty in New York, and they're just skateboarding all over New York, and it's just really, really well shot. You know, and they put the right music to it, and it's just really, like, hypnotic. It's just fun. It's a fun show. I watched that, and now the show that I really, really liked, and I watched it over the last couple of weeks, Mr. In Between. It's an FX show. That. So it's on Hulu, all three seasons. It's also, I think if you have one of the better packages with your cable company, you can stream it there too, because I've watched a couple episodes, you know, on Verizon, on Fios. But it's really good. The guy, I was thinking about it today. There's sort of a Breaking Bad element to it, but he never breaks bad. He's kind of always bad, you know, but he's more of a Mike character. Mike Armantrout than a Walter White, you know. So he's more like a fixer. He's basically a hitman, and it's kind of like, you know, just this one scene where this guy go to collect on a gambling debt, and the guy's like, you know, you pay him, if you don't pay him, then you deal with me. Yeah. You don't want to mess with Mr. In-Between. He's really good. The guy's great. You know, so the story is he's like ex-military. And then I guess he just starts working for various, you know, either they're drug dealers or loan sharks or whatever, just doing odd jobs. He kind of freelances, you know, and gets paid by the job. And he's very good at his job. It's three seasons. So it's, you know, and it's his family life and the work life, you know. And then the work life starts to bleed into the family life a little bit, you know, as the seasons go on. And it's like, remember in The Sopranos when the kids started to catch on to what dad does for a living? Well, he's got one daughter, and you know she starts asking questions when she starts approaching teenage years. So, and it's good. And he's got a brother who has sort of a, I don't know if it was like ALS or some illness like that. And he's kind of taking care of his brother. There's some serious moments. It's got some really dark humor. Did you watch Justified?
I watched the first couple.
I watched
seasons.
A little bit of it because I really liked the character. I really liked the guy, Oliphant.
But there was one guy, Dewey Crow, who was kind of like a dumbass, and he's in this. But he's Australian, and now he's actually using his regular accent. And he's pretty good. The Ray character, the Mr. In-Between character, does some work for him on the side. So he owns like a strip club, and he works at the club as a bouncer and security and all this kind of stuff. So that's his story to the family.
Sure.
But he does security.
That's what he does.
And it's funny. I was reading an interview with the guy. And the actor who plays, I can't think of the actor's name.
Scott Ryan.
Scott Ryan. So he wrote it, and he stars in it. But he's like, you know, he kind of made it so that, you know, he's like, in this kind of life, you know, the less you say about your job, the better, right? So he's like, which is kind of convenient from an actor's perspective because he has minimal lines. So he's like, these are a lot less lines I got to memorize. Yeah. He's like, I can't tell my kid everything I do. It's just got to be dribs and drabs. So it's good. It's really good. I think you would like it. So what do we say here? So Lupin Part 2, Mr. In-Between, Betty Season 1 and 2, and watched a couple of movies too. Did you see the ads for that movie Zola? It was like the Twitter thread that went viral about this girl. She was a stripper, and she initiates this other stripper to go down to Florida where they're supposed to work, and then they eventually stayed, and they, but it was like a ruse so that they could do all this prostitution down there. It was just insane. Yeah, it was crazy. And it was with Kylie Riley Keough.
Yeah, Elvis' granddaughter. Yeah,
I think it's like Elvis' granddaughter or something. It was a really strange movie. It was okay. It wasn't great, but it was pretty good. So it's this whole road trip down to Florida, and just everything goes off the rails. It gets a little bit crazy. It was interesting. It was interesting. I wouldn't say it was, you know, it wasn't the greatest movie, but it was pretty good. Well, we actually went to the theater and saw that. That was like, you know, the kids were at camp. We both had a day off. I forget which holiday it was. It might have been, it was 5th of July, because we had the Monday off. So it was the day after 4th of July. So the kids went to camp and we went to the movies. And then there was No Sudden Move, the Soderbergh movie that was on HBO Max with Don Cheadle and Benicio del Toro. Yeah. I have to watch it again. There was a lot going on. There was like double crosses and triple crosses and quadruple crosses, and it was a little hard to follow. There were interesting moments, but I need to go back and watch that again. So I'm gonna leave the verdict on that one. And the last one we watched was the movie with Kristen Wiig, Barb and Star Go to La Vista Del Mar.
Oh yeah, that's supposed to be very funny.
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
Funny ridiculous or just ridiculous?
It was pretty good. It was a little long. I think they could have probably cut about 20 minutes out of it.
See, that's what that looks like to me. It looks like Lorne Michaels made another full-length movie out of a five-minute skit, which they're usually just awful.
Yeah, but they were good. I mean, she was good. The other woman was good. Jamie Dornan's in it. The guy that was in The Fall. Remember, he was the rapist in The Fall? And he's got like a song and dance routine. It's like, it's just bizarre. It's so bizarre. That's the watched list. How about you, Senor Aaron?
Well, let's see.
Here we go.
I'm in the midst of a lot of things, but we'll get to
Hey, Mike, what country do you think we're going to go to?
He's watching a lot of Portuguese docudramas.
So actually, I don't have anything foreign. You'll be happy to hear.
Oh, my goodness.
So the only series that I actually finished, I think, since we last spoke, is Never Have I Ever, season 2 on Netflix. And if you don't know of this, I highly recommend it. It's a created and produced by Mindy Kaling, and it is about a Indian American girl who living in here in Southern California in high school and trying to get through, you know, all the rigors of high school. She's really smart, but she's boy crazy, trying to deal with all the cliques in school and trying to navigate getting through life, and her father passes away suddenly, who she was just adored in season 1. So now she's dealing with her overbearing mom a little bit, who's a dermatologist, and being the only Indian kid in school and dealing with that, and two boys she likes, but doesn't like and that kind of likes them both and doesn't know how to figure that out. Season two kind of picks up from all that, and she's always making the wrong moves, trying to figure out how to get what she wants, but unfortunately she hurts people in the process. And it's very funny, and probably the most wacky part of the show is that it's narrated. And it's really the inner voice of Devi, the main character, a 17, 18-year-old girl. The voice is John McEnroe.
I'm sorry. So, what now?
Yes, John McEnroe, the tennis player. And he
So is that the voice inside her head, is John McEnroe?
Yes. And it's, well, it's not in her head. It's how we hear her thoughts and some thoughts. And it's like this narration, like a play-by-play guy. Oh, no, don't do that, Devi. Oh, that's what I did in the U.S. Open in 1974. it's hilarious. He's amazing. And I just read an article about how he was at some event with, and Mindy Kaling said, hey, I've got this idea, and I want to talk to you about doing this show. And he's like, yeah, sure. And he never thought he'd hear from her again. And lo and behold, they're on season two. And you only see him in one episode, but it's just his voice. It's just classic John McEnroe, because he's a very funny person. It's really good. It's got a lot of heart. It's got a lot of depth. There's a lot of Mindy Kaling in it, and it's very funny. You know, if you're a 17-year-old girl, you're really going to get this.
Is that why you really like it so much, Aaron? Because you're like a 17-year-old girl?
It's really funny. I highly recommend it. So season two just came out on Netflix. I watched one movie and one documentary. Gunpowder Milkshake.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
On Netflix, which is with our friend, our Scottish actress friend, Karen Gillan. Right? Yes. How do you say her last name?
Have Gillan? We overstated?
Yep. I think so. Well, how's this?
She calls in.
How's this? It looks like Gillan. We think it's Gillan.
Yeah, right. Yes. The G and the L and the A and the N are all silent.
You know how you say Gillan? You know how you say it? Lefrog.
That's right. So she plays a hit person for some organization. Her mom was a hit person for the same organization. A lot of backstory. Her mom is Lena Headley from Game of Thrones, and who's been missing for a long time, who out of the blue comes back. And Karen and Gillan is trying to, has a job and tries to finish it, except there's a little girl involved. It's convoluted. You know, it's one of these, you know, stories. And she has to help. She gets help from Lena Headley's three old mates, which is Carla Gugino.
Oh, wow. Gugino's kissed.
Michelle Yeoh and Angela Bassett. The good guy, bad guy, the guy that runs the firm that Karen is working for, is Paul Giamatti. It's a big shoot 'em up. I mean, it's 70% action, and it's just a lot of guns and a lot of brutality, and there's a lot of humor going on during all of it. And it's not going to change your life. It's not going to make you smarter. It might actually make you dumber, but it's kind of fun.
Is that possible?
Challenge accepted.
For us? It's always possible. So that was on Netflix. It was a little wacky. You know, I get a little bored by the repetitiveness of the violence in all these kinds of movies. It just gets... It's just endless, 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 endless. And this one was one of those movies. It could have been a half hour less of the violence and give me a little bit more dialogue. The last thing I watched, I guess it's an anthology series on HBO called Music Box. And the first episode is about Woodstock in 1999, which was 30 years after the first one. And this is actually, I think this whole series is put together by Bill Simmons' group. He was producing docs for ESPN, the 30 for 30 series. So it retells this story with an amazing amount of footage and interview with that whole, if you don't know the story, the quickie version is that the original two guys who did Woodstock in 69 and also did it in 95, they did another one in 95. They decided to do another one at the 30-year anniversary somewhere in upstate New York, and they got an old Air Force base that was decommissioned. I think it was an Air Force base, to be the place. They thought this was the best because it has fences and keep everyone in place. They're not going to go anywhere else, and this is going to be the way to do it. and it becomes a total disaster. So that at the time, this is what you're talking 20 years into MTV, 10 years into MTV, 10?
Yeah, 20, 15 20.
Years into MTV.
Yeah.
And MTV's in this really weird point because you've got your post-grunge, your after Nirvana, and that whole thing. And now there's this whole group of bands like Limp Bizkit and bands that are sort of white guy bands that are kind of bridging the gap between metal and rock and rap. But MTV's also got these kind of like little, like they used to call them little sister bands. It's the bands your little sister likes. The Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears and all those guys. So they're sort of, they don't even know really where they are, but they're trying to, MTV's all over the place. And MTV was a, I think they co-produced this event. So they had, the guy that hosts one of the late night shows, he hosted TRL at MTV at the time. He's there on the scene. He's interviewing people. Everybody hates him because it's mostly just white guys. And you can argue that all these white guys that are just crazy at this event are the white guys that we see today that are crazy at events. But they're older, right? They're 20 years older. It becomes basically a riot. It's hot. People are dehydrated. They don't have enough water. Now, this is, 20 years ago? Yeah. It's $4 for a bottle of water. That's a lot of money for 20 years ago. Now we don't think...
It's a lot of money now.
Well, $4 now, you wouldn't think so much about a bottle. But then... And it was just a disaster. They had first-person accounts of people. And, you know, this is pre-cell phone, right? There's 300,000 people there milling around. And there's four stages. So if you're there with a couple people and somebody goes off to one of the stages, how would you find that person? There's no phone. There's no cell phone. There's no... Right. They have, like... little banks of phones, but who are you calling? And there's some people die at this thing. Last night of shows with Limp Bizkit, it just becomes crazy. Fires start. Guys are lighting up everything. They're tearing the place down. It just becomes a crazy, crazy riot for 4 days. And they talked to these guys who organized it, and they thought it wasn't so bad. Weirdly, but it wasn't good. It was horrible. And there was a lot of nudity, and there was a lot of guys doing a lot of bad things to women, which now, of course, that would be completely looked down upon. Then it was just frat boys going crazy. It's very sad looking back at that era. It was just not a good time. So they talked to these guys who started the one in 69. They were hoping for another weekend of love and peace, just like with Hendrix in 69 and Country Joe and the Fish. And they just didn't get that. It just not even close, because these kids didn't want any part of that. They wanted to get to the man, and they wanted a better show, and they wanted not $4 water. And it's told really well. And it's a very sad, look back at that era. And they talked about doing another show, I guess, 5 years later, 10 years later. And they tried to get the money together, and they couldn't do it. Interestingly enough, they do an interesting juxtaposition. 4 months after that Woodstock show, I think they said 4 months, was the very first Coachella show out here in the Coachella Valley out in Indio, past Palm Springs. And it was infinitely different. It was well done, no issues with security, no issues with water. There are bathrooms, and now that's the biggest festival in the world. Well, arguably the most well known. And
personally, I have no desire to go to any of those shows ever.
Well,
I didn't 20 years ago either.
And the difference is 20 years ago versus now. Now you've got baby boomers who can go and spend $500 on a premium ticket and never actually be on the ground. Back then, there was no such thing. You paid your $2,500 or whatever the cost for 4 days, and you're walking around literally in human waste all weekend, and no showers, and just disgusting. So it
sounds like a good time.
The festival scene has changed dramatically.
You need to follow this up with that Fire Festival documentary.
The Fire one is that's a whole different thing, because that's about
that was a whole scam.
Promoters scamming. Yeah,
right.
Everybody. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So that was what I watched.
How
so,
many episodes are on there? Was it just the one episode, or are there?
They've only had one, so I don't know what the other ones. If it says episode one, so I assume there's going to be more. So hopefully they're just music based docs. So we should move on to some other mezcal.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yes, mezcal number numero dos.
Which would be the...
Ensemble Cuiche, however you say it.
Tempestate?
Tempestate, 46.5% ABV. Is there anything on the website about this one?
Reminiscent of a relaxing day of fishing and spending time with nature, this expression brings smoked salmon and a bit of saltiness, lots of mineral tastes rounded out, a season of memories captured in a glass. 46.5%.
That is different than the other one.
Yeah, I think on the nose you're getting a lot less of that fuel kind of note. It seems a little more well-rounded.
Yep. This one's even more minerally is good. I was getting more ginny.
I think I get a little more licorice.
Also sweet.
You went for the taste?
More burn.
And a little more viscosity.
All right, I'm going to go for a taste. That's hotter. That's got some heat to it.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange? Because the other one was 45% also, yeah. Right?
But it's got a lot less of that smoky earthiness that I had from before
good.
Too, though.
It's good.
That's nice.
It's a little really nice. A little more earthy. I'm not getting like the brine, the seashore, whatever, you know, the salmon fishing. I'm not getting the brine from that, but it's decidedly different than the other one. That, you know, I don't know what they do to make them different since they're both aged in glass. It's not like the casking would be different.
Well, you know, they said they use different like varietals, not varietals, but I guess mezcal from different
terroir,
locations.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a different variety of what do they call
that?
Pina. This is almost like fuller. A little more fuller and like more rounded flavor than the other one. Not that the other one was bad. The other one was really good, too.
On the second sip, I'm getting a little more salt.
Second taste, it's way saltier. You said you didn't get briny. I definitely get briny.
It's a little more, it's a little oily, too.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of texture. I like the texture.
Yeah, I definitely think I like that one better than the first one. Not that I didn't like the first one, but I think I like the second one better.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
I think I do, too.
But again, your point on the first one that you'd make an old-fashioned out of that. I don't think you can make an old-fashioned out of this. You know, it's just totally different.
No, I don't think I would. Okay, so we're moving on to what we are watching.
We're 3 days into track and field for the Olympics, so that'll be what's on the TV for me. I'll be watching that for quite some time. That's the part of the Olympics that I really like.
Who's that one woman? Sydney something?
Sydney McLaughlin. Yeah, she's like the world record holder or something in the 400 hurdles. She's tremendous. Yeah.
It's like watching Usain Bolt. Remember how Usain Bolt didn't really look like he was like, it was just like effort? She's just like a gazelle. I mean, just like graceful and just effortless.
There's a Norwegian guy for the men's 400 hurdles. His last name's like Karstan or something like that. He's the same way. You watch him run and you're just like, wow, this guy's unbelievable. Because they're you know, once you get the form down, it's 13 steps between or 12 steps depending on how tall you are.
It's crazy.
To get to the hurdles, there's no stutter step. There's none of that. These people are just zipping along and you're like, wow, these guys are really good.
Ange, maybe you and I will bounce around between what we're, because we probably have some crossover on things that we are watching. I am almost done. I don't know how many more episodes I have, but not very many. I finally dove into What We Do in the Shadows, and it's on Hulu, the Vampire
that show. Hysterical.
And I think I've got two more episodes to go.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not laugh out loud funny.
No, it's just, it's like, it just puts a smile on your face, and the characters are fantastic.
Yes, it is written so well. And I have to admit, the mockumentary thing has been overdone for so long since The Office. There are so many shows that do that thing, from Modern Family to you name it. But it works. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's really funny. The character,
Five
main characters.
I think it's five,
They are so... Five. They are so good. They work... They are so funny together. They're so funny on their own. And I don't even know who they are. I'm sure they're from other places. I don't recognize any of them.
I think four of them are British. And then the one guy, the energy vampire, he was on Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul? I think he was on Better Call Saul.
He looks very familiar.
Yeah, the energy vampire was the guy who was like, he got his he was selling, what was he selling, like meth? Or no, he was selling some kind of drug. I forget what he was selling, but then he had the baseball card collection.
And he
gets like the Hummer with like the big spinning wheels.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. That was like the first season, I think, of Better Call.
Might have been. First or second. But
I think it's funny that Nick Kroll is in it.
Yeah. Nick Kroll. And you saw the, what's it called, episode, right? The Jackie DeDonna episode? when he goes into hiding, Laszlo.
Oh, my Laszlo. God, that is the plays in like Western Pennsylvania or Eastern Pennsylvania someplace. Oh, my God, as a volleyball, you know, helping the volleyball team out. I kept thinking of Mayor of Easttown. Like, she's going to walk in into the bar.
But you know who the guy who was chasing him was, right? The other vampire was that was chasing him?
Yeah,
it was Mark Hamill.
That was Mark Hamill?
Yeah, we had to. Oh, that's right. You had to go when we were talking to Joshua Hatton because we talked about that. Yeah, that was Mark Hamill. And it took me a while. I didn't realize until the second viewing, and I'm looking at him. I'm like, I know that guy. Who is that guy? I'm like, is that Mark Hamill? And I look it up, and it was Mark Hamill. He was great. God. I thought he was hysterical. That was just so funny.
So there's a movie, too, right?
Yeah, the movie came first. The movie was really good. The movie
with same actors?
No. Taika Waititi's in it. And Jermaine Clement, is that his name? The one from The Flight of the Conchords?
I did not see it.
Yeah, it was good. The movie was really good. And what's his name? Did you watch Flight of the Conchords?
I did. Not every season, but a lot of it.
Did you know the one guy who was his manager? The one that worked at the New Zealand Tourist Board? He's in it too, and he's one of the. I think he's a werewolf.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, it's funny. The movie's good. That's why I wanted to watch. That's why I wanted to watch the show. Actually, it was really Greg Swartz who got me to really, really invest in the show heavily, because I tried to watch it a couple times and it was like, it's okay. But then I had to really, really sink my teeth into it, if you will.
Aha.
Oh, it's funny. Funny, it's so this, good.
You know, episode 17.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of Count Floyd, where they're just a little silly, but then the show itself is pretty good.
I like what's his name too. What's the familiar?
Guillermo.
Oh, Guillermo's great, and it's just hysterical that what is he? He's a descendant of Van Helsing.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, he loves the vampires, but he's so good at killing the vampires. It's just really well done. It's a fun show. I can't wait till season 3.
Anything, Ange, that you're in the middle of?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of Dave, which is on FX. And I'm now finally realizing that FX really has, like, a murderer's row list of comedy shows. They've got a lot of good stuff. They've really got a lot of good stuff. I'm going to start digging deeper into their catalog. But Dave is interesting. So the guy who's in it is this guy, Dave Bird, and he's actually from outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat because he's like, you know, you see, they'll do like a flashback when he's a kid and he's wearing like an Iverson jersey, you know, and he's really into basketball and rap. So he's a Jewish kid who grew up in like the burbs, you know, not affluent parents, but his parents did well. His dad was a lawyer. They did pretty good. What's his name plays his dad? David Paymer?
I saw who plays his mom.
And his mom is Gina Hecht. They're really good together. David Paymer's great. He's really good.
Gina Hecht played Henry Winkler's girlfriend in the movie with
Night Shift.
Night Shift. That's right. Thank you.
Really?
And she leaves him.
Wow, that's funny.
She was also in Mork and Mindy.
Was she really?
Wow.
Yeah, she was in Mork and Mindy.
Okay. Yeah, it's a fun show. So he's a rapper, and he's kind of got like, you know, he's not a super serious rapper. He's got a little bit of humor to him. And the show just goes off the rails sometimes. It's good. I'm not saying every episode's great, but there's a lot of really funny stuff, and the cast is great, not just him. And it's kind of weird because it almost has like a remember, was it Rami?
Yeah.
Where Rami was, you know, with all his talk about spiritualism and all this kind of stuff, he was pretty self-centered, right? I mean, he was, and the same thing with Dave, you know. And what's funny is he's got like this cast, these friends that like support him like to the end. You know, no matter how much of a jerk he is, or how much of a self-centered bastard he is sometimes, or how self-absorbed he can get, these folks still stick with him, and it's really bizarre. But then you wonder, though, is it like, are they hanging on because he might hit it big, you know, and they'll be there to help him out and on, you know, just be his group? But it's a good cast. It's him, this guy Andrew Santino, who I believe has a whiskey podcast, actually. He's a stand-up comedian, and I was looking on his Instagram feed, and I think he's Cheeto, no, what was it? I can't think what his name is on Instagram, but I think he's got a whiskey podcast. This guy Gata, who is hysterical, and his real name is Gata, so I don't know, and a bunch of other people. But it's a good show. It's a really interesting show. Not one to watch with the kids. I thought it was, and then there was an episode where it kind of, then it was like, ooh, okay, maybe they shouldn't be watching this. I got a little uncomfortable. So I'm like, sorry, kid, I ain't watching it with you. Because I figured, you know, my eldest is very into the hip-hop and the rap, so I thought maybe he would like it. But then I just got a little uncomfortable. I'm like, I can't watch this. But it's pretty good. So Dave, and then there is, I've been watching this documentary on HBO, The 100-Foot Wave.
Oh, I want to watch that.
That's actually really well done.
It's only 3 or 4 episodes, right?
I don't know. I'm only on episode 2. That's as far as they've gotten so far. It's week to week. Now, what's interesting with all these shows is they're all week to week at this point, which is kind of nice because, you know, you have your Friday night show, your Saturday night show. So now I could watch multiple shows, you know, over the span, which is kind of nice, you know, as opposed to binging a show for like 2 weeks, which is what I do with Mr. In Between.
Apple TV Plus does the same thing.
They've got the
weekly ones.
Yeah, yep. we'll get to that. We'll get to the gorilla in the room in a couple seconds on Apple Plus. But yeah, this 100-Foot Wave one is really interesting. So the lead guy is this Garrett McNamara. And it's a documentary, so these are all like real people. So this guy, Garrett McNamara, and he was a surfer when he was younger. Then he owned a surf shop. And then, you know, they give you like a little bit of his backstory in the first episode. And he's like, you know, then he was married. He's like, all right, well, I can't surf for the rest of my life, so I'll be the responsible guy. I'll open up a surf shop. So he opens a surf shop. But of course, he's always missing the big waves. So somehow he stumbles upon this whole big wave surfing thing. And it's kind of interesting because it's not just like paddling out. They do like an assist with like a jet ski.
Yeah.
You know, because they go out farther. Well, they go.
Yes. Yeah. That's pretty normal. Because you can't paddle. If you paddle out that far, you would, you know, be exhausted. So you just.
Right.
To get out there, you need to get pulled out. Yep.
Right. So now he's going for these big, huge, massive waves. And there's a few spots that are apparently very, very like prominent for it. I think they said there's a place called Jaws. I think it's in Hawaii, maybe.
Yep, Jaws. Yep.
So, and there's a few other spots that are really big. But then this guy, you know, this Garrett McNamara, because I guess their whole big thing, too, is that they have to photograph all this stuff because of all these competitions.
The photography end of it and the safety end of it is like, yeah, the athlete has to get out there and do this stuff. But there's all these other people that are out there, you know, around them while they're, you know, whether they're filming them or getting ready to save them, it's dangerous for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's like the guy that climbs Mount Everest. Well, you know, you didn't get up there on your own. You've got the Sherpas carrying all your gear. You've got the 15 guys that are carrying all this camera stuff.
Correct.
You know, or, you know, like when they shoot these movies and you got the, you know, like the skydiving scene in the Mission Impossible movie. It's like, yeah, okay, great. You got 5 guys skydiving. You got some poor bastard with a camera strapped to his head shooting all this. and he's skydiving too.
There's a science of it, of course, but you don't know that the day that you're there is going to be big waves, right?
Right.
You can predict some of it, tidal records look like, but you may not get the waves you want. The weather could change, you know.
Right.
The big competition out here is in California is at Mavericks up near Half Moon Bay. And it doesn't happen the same day every year. It depends on the weather because they want to be there on the biggest day and everyone gets towed out and 100-foot waves and it's nuts.
Yeah, so this guy Garrett, I guess he gets a name for himself as like a, you know, big wave surfer, and he gets a call from I guess like the tourist bureau in this town Navarre, in Portugal, and they were explaining to you know they were telling him about the waves out there, and it wasn't a really respected spot. I guess this big surfing community, you know, they know where all the hot spots are, so he goes out there and he takes a look at it, and it's kind of a wild spot. It's like it's central. Western coast of Portugal. It's this little town, and there's like this outcropping, and then apparently there's like this big, huge canyon that goes down. So all these waves converge. So I guess the water goes into the canyon, and then when it gets back to the shallows, the water rises up. But the waves are coming in from like 5 different spots. I mean, it's absolute insanity. You know, so he goes out there with a couple of people, and this is probably early 2000s, late 2000s when he first gets approached. And they go out in the winter when there's nobody there. You know, so it's a big fishing community. And there's, you know, I guess it's like a beach town in the summer. But in the winter, there's nobody there. So they go out in like November when the big waves start coming out. And, you know, the tourist bureau there brings him out or whoever it was. And he's, you know, he networks. He brings some people in. He brings this one guy in from England, another guy in from Ireland. And I didn't know there was surfing in Ireland. The one guy was from like Sligo, where Sligo, where normal people were shot.
County Sligo, yeah.
And yeah. He surfs up there and all this stuff. And, you know, and they develop the system of how they're going to do the safety for this thing, because it's just a crazy spot. You know, you got to walk down all these steps to get down to the beachhead. And, you know, they're going in from the, they go in from the harbor with the jet skis and go out in there. You know, and they kind of figured it out. So they'd have somebody, they'd have the guy's wife would be up top at the lighthouse spotting everybody, because they're like, once you get into the waves, if you're on a jet ski, if there's another guy that goes down, you can't see him, you know, because you're in like, I guess you're in the trough.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So they developed this whole safety system. So the one day they're out there, I think it's like 2011, I showed you, it went viral. And they surfed like an 80-foot wave or some kind of insanity. And it was funny because you watch the thing and, you know, they're out there the one day. And, you know, by the end of the day, the guy's exhausted, this Garrett guy. He's just like, I'm not surfing tomorrow. It's just not going to happen. You know, I'm not feeling it. And he's out there. But he's like, but I'll tow you guys out. So he tows these guys out on the jet ski. And he's like, but look, just surf. Surf because you like it. Don't surf because you're trying to break a record. Just go out there and have a good time. And then all of a sudden they're like, dude, the wave is coming. Get on the damn board and do it. You know, and he goes out there and he surfs the thing. But what was cool about the show, what I liked, is that it's not just about him. You know, they're giving credit to everybody else that's involved in this. He's like, I just happened to be the guy that was on the wave at that time. You know, but I can't do it without, you know, the five guys on the jet skis and the spotter and the support crew and the cameraman and all these people. So it's kind of cool that they're, you know, it's a team effort. You know, he's the orchestrator. He's the guy that got this thing started. But, you know, without all his help, he can't do anything. So it's a good show. I liked it. First episode was really about how they got the Nazare. Second one's about how they got the big wave. I know coming up, someone's going to get really hurt and wind up in the hospital. So we'll see how that goes. But it's a good show.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I want to watch that. Couple quickies that I'm in close to ending. Kevin can F himself. I don't know if we talked about that one before.
I think you and I did.
And I think I have one episode to go. Don't want to regurgitate it again too much, but it's with, I can't think of her name, the actress. She was
the sister on Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek. And she plays a not a very happy wife of a annoying Boston suburb guy. And she basically wants to get rid of him. And she it's almost like a two shows in one. It's a laugh track sitcom that you'd see on CBS on Monday nights. And it's also a darker version of her life and what she's really going through, being this unhappy person in her marriage, and how her goal is to kind of rid herself of this relationship.
I watched about three episodes, and guess what? She's right. Killed the guy.
Well, it's the way you feel about most of those CBS comedy shows with this comedian who's whoever it is, insert the name, and they're all annoying. She's living that life, and it's horrible for her. So I got one more episode of that, and then two other ones real quick. Physical, which is on Apple Plus. I think there might be one episode or two to go. I cannot think of the actress
Roseburn.
Who stars
Rose
in that.
Byrne.
Rose Byrne. It's really, really good. It is about a woman in the early 80s, right? Who has got an eating disorder. She's married with a young child. Her husband has lost his job. He's a professor, and now he wants to be a state assemblyman, let's say, and they live in San Diego. But they've both come out of the 60s with these crazy hippie ideals, and he wants to, you know, change the world. And in San Diego, she is spending all their money on fast food and then throwing it out.
Because so she's bulimic? Is that what it is?
Correct. So she has got this eating disorder, which is, you know, kind of, that's when things are starting to come to the fore about eating disorders in the world. But she finds aerobics to be somewhat of a benefit to her. And it's kind of a crazy story how she gets into it with people she meets at a mall. And ultimately she's going to turn this into a business for herself. And she's more than likely, I think it kind of starts backwards. I think the first episode kind of shows she's kind of successful at it. Rose Byrne is great. She is just so good in this show. The ensemble cast is very good. And there's talking about narrators, there's a narrator too, her inner thoughts. She says the right thing to people, but her brain is trying to say the wrong thing. Her brain tells her to go home, to not go binge food and throw it up. She wants to go do that. And she is constantly battling with this voice in her head. It's very, very well done and not always pleasant to watch. On the opposite side of that, on Apple Plus, I think we're on week 2 or 3, is Schmigadoon. If you've not heard of Schmigadoon, I highly recommend it.
I watched about half an episode. I was kind of curious.
We really enjoyed it here. It's fun. It's funny. Now, it's also out of that whole Lorne Michaels corral of stuff. It's all Saturday Night Live alumni and folks, I think. It's really well done. It's basically a long spoof of musical comedy and Broadway. They put a lot of effort into making it seem like musicals from the 40s and 50s. Big ensemble cast of people, dance, women and men singing and, you know, rhyme and the leads sing as well. It's really fun. Polar opposite from Physical. And then, Angie, you said you had the big elephant in the room.
I have one in between.
Oh, you got another one?
Either of you watching The White Lotus on HBO?
I gave up after one episode.
Did you really?
I did.
I really like it. We're both watching it. The wife and I are watching it on Sunday nights. I think we found like that every Sunday night there's at least one show, you know, and it all started with The Undoing, and then it's kind of gone from there. I think it's really good. I mean, it's kind of dark. The people are irritating as hell, but there's parts of it that are just really, really funny. I just find it amusing at times. You know, the cast is great. I mean, it's got a really good cast. Steve Zahn is his annoying usual self. Connie Britton is in it. Who's the woman in all the Christopher Guest movies? What is her name? I can't think of her name now.
Jennifer Coolidge.
Is it Jennifer Coolidge?
Yeah, Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh, my God. There is one scene with her. All I'll say is her mother passes away. Yes. She's got some ashes. She is hell-bent on scattering her ashes in the Pacific Ocean.
That's the first episode, yeah.
Well, I'm saying, but the episode where she actually does this or tries to do it.
I thought it was the first one.
Oh, it is the cringiest, most ridiculous thing ever. It's pretty good.
I can't figure out what this is supposed to, at least from the episode I watched.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to just be a spoof of, not spoof, but a look at holiday resorts? Hawaiian resort? Or is it supposed to be like a spoof of like Fantasy Island? I mean, if I cannot figure what it's supposed to be.
I'm enjoying it. That's all I know. The characters are ridiculous. I mean, everybody's awful.
Everybody's
just about
awful.
Everybody is awful. From the help to the people there. Well, like there's this one character, what's her name? Alexandra Daddario. So she's on her honeymoon with this guy. And he's, I guess, very successful and comes from a wealthy family. And, you know, he said he was supposed to get this suite with a plunge pool and this, that, and the other thing, and it's not exactly to his specifications, and he is just harassing the guy who's like, I guess, the manager of the hotel about this, because he feels like he got ripped off.
Yeah.
And the manager of the hotel is kind of he's at his wit's end. I think he's like a recovering alcoholic or drug addict or something like that, so he's like 5 years clean and sober, but everybody's just working his last nerve, and he's starting to go off the rails. So it's just a really interesting show. It's pretty good.
I have one before we go to the big one for the week that I'm binging through on Netflix. Here, I had to go get, you guys needed something from another country, so here it goes. It's called Black Space.
Did we?
You did. It's called Black Space, and it's on, I said Netflix. It's a thriller drama about a school shooting in a high school, and three or four people come into the high school, and they're wearing cloaks and they're wearing masks that are like unicorns, and it's during like Israeli let's say Independence Day, and there's something going on in the auditorium, and these guys come in and start shooting, and they kill four kids. And one cop who actually went to this high school when he was younger and had bullying problems when he was at that high school, he is the lead investigator to figure out what happened, who did what, and it's a interesting mystery of who did it. I'm about halfway through. It's very well done, and some of it's a little bit more than a little bit unbelievable. This cop goes off the rails a bit, and you know, in any real world, he probably would be, you know, taken out and hung, but he's allowed to somehow stay on his job. But
what do you know?
Well, that's a good point. Get a good point.
What do you know?
It depends on the city, I guess.
Is it an Israeli show?
Israeli, so
are the Dirty Dozen in it?
It's funny you said that. This is one. Well, there's only one person I recognize, and it's a kid who's in Shtetl.
Okay.
And he's one of the students. But other than that, I don't know anyone else in it.
They didn't get like Zvika from The Butcher and the Baker, or The Butcher, the Baker, the Candlestick Baker.
You know, there's another kid in there that I think is actually from another Israeli show that was on HBO. That was a reenactment of a murder of some Palestinian kids.
Was that Our Boys? Is that what that was?
I think it was Our Boys. I think it was. Okay. Was it called Our? Yeah, I think it was called Our Boys.
I forget something. Like that.
I think this kid is from that show. I'm not sure, but anyway, it's really good. I recommend it. At least halfway through, we'll see
how
it's called
Black Space.
Falls apart. Black Space. And it's called Black Space because this is. It's. I think it was just come out. It came out this year. It's very interesting because it talks a lot about social media and kids.
Okay.
And all of these kids in this school, they don't communicate on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. They all communicate on a dark web app called Blackspace. So that's what Blackspace means.
Okay, I got you.
Okay. All right, let's hit it.
The Big Kahuna?
The Big Kahuna.
Ted Lasso Season 2.
Does Mike watch it?
I don't know. Have you seen Ted Lasso yet, Mike?
I haven't watched it yet, but that's on my list.
It's an easy watch. Season 1 is a really easy, fast watch. It's a lot of fun. I've seen it 3 times. Well, you know what? I could put it on while I'm working at home. Don't tell my boss that. But I could put it on my iPad and just kind of, you know, listen and watch. And yeah, it's just fun.
Are you through season 1?
I am up to date. I'm up to episode 2. How do you feel about it so far?
It feels like the same show as last year.
Sorta, you know, and it's. I think it's just
less soccer.
I think it needs to find its footing for season 2. It hasn't, or at least it hasn't with me.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying it. There's parts that I really like, but like some of it's almost like, you know, the humor's not. It's more like set up. You know, it feels a little more stagey. You know, where it's,
I don't know. That's funny you said that. I don't feel that yet.
So I don't know, but like I like some of the story. I think I like it in the direction it's going to go. You know, because obviously Ted's going to be wrestling with some stuff with that, with the team psychologist on. And I really like the, what's it called? I like the Roy Kent storyline. He stole the show the second episode. He absolutely stole the show.
You know, it's getting, to some extent, well, I don't know, we're only on episode 2. You know, it needs to be a little bit less about soccer and more about people at some point. Mm-hmm. You can't just keep replaying soccer games, and you can, but it that would get a little redundant and... So you've got a couple new characters. You've got people in different places than they were last year, like Roy and Jamie and even
Nate.
So you've got people in different positions, and how are they going to manage their new place in the world? And throughout it all, how does Ted deal with all this change? I think we'll see. You know, it's not hard to predict. You probably see something going back to Ted's family, right? But it's so well done. Jason Sudeikis is just so perfect in this role. He's got the pitter-patter down of this character so well. No matter what he says, you believe him. You know, the sky is green. Okay, if he says it, I kind of believe it. There is a almost too good to be true aspect of it. It's right on the edge of me being annoyed by this. It's too happy. It's too Pollyanna. And that's the reason I didn't want to watch it last year.
Right.
I didn't want to watch Pollyanna, and it kind of runs right on the edge, but it really does have heart, and it really is well written, and it's really good. So So far.
Did you see the first episode of the new episode that was on Thursday?
Of what?
Of Ted Lasso. We're caught up.
Yeah, we've seen them both.
Right, so you're all upset. So you saw the Diane Sawyer?
Yeah. She responded on Twitter.
So I didn't see the episode, but I just saw Diane Sawyer with her comment back, where it's now not just a small show, it's a big enough show now that Diane Sawyer's making comments.
Yes.
Move, Ted.
Where he makes a comment as Ted Lasso about, going out for a drink. Same thing I'd say if Diane Sawyer asked me on a date. Yes, please. And her comment back was, I'm in.
Yeah, your move.
Totally unrelated to the aspect of the show. I have talked about two. Ted Lasso's a third. There's three shows from Apple TV Plus. So Apple, which people were a little bit not sure about whether they were going to be able to make quality TV, they are.
Yeah, they're doing it. Yeah.
Did I see you pouring another little bit more mezcal?
I'm going for
our final one from our friends at Impact.
Because I think we've moved on to what we want to watch, right?
Correct.
So we are the Mal de Amor Cuiche Mezcal, 48% ABV. Closer to a 5. Not quite there, but we're getting close. This one really hits home. It's citrus with a bite, has a long finish, and has a smell of earth, like potted soil. It says bottled at 45.
It says 48 on this little label.
I know, same here.
We got sample.
Well, whatever.
It doesn't have the mineraliness to it on the nose.
Minerality?
That's what I meant. Yes.
It smells great. I like the smell on all three of these things. And they're all a little bit different.
I think I like the smell on the second one better.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Did you go for the taste already?
I did. And it's got a little rubbery note to it, but less of that gin botanical notes. It does have a long finish.
It doesn't feel as hot as the other two.
But it is.
So this one might actually be interesting in a old fashioned.
And I think it has a little less viscosity.
Yeah. Yep. It's not as the second one was the oiliest.
Yeah.
This is definitely thinner.
Yeah. They're both really good. Or all three of them really good. I think I like the second one better. I'd probably go the second, the third, and then the first one.
I would almost go in the same order.
I'd go 1-3-2.
Or actually, I might go 2-1-3. Because this one may be almost a little too polite.
And you don't like polite.
It is kind of polite.
No, I don't.
Yeah, right.
This one's like really, really like kind of mellow. I think it's the more approachable of the three.
I agree. It's the sipper.
It's nice.
And I like tequila, but I got to say, it doesn't have the depth of mezcal.
Correct.
Why is it?
I think it's the difference between the roasted and the steamed. This just adds a little bit more to it. It has more depth.
I've always found tequila to be, I don't want to say vodka-like, but kind of bland-ish.
Compared to this, it's bland.
Very bland. And I never really understood what the point of it was. It's just so kind of like vodka. I don't really get that. There's not a lot of flavor there, so what's the point of this? It's just alcohol.
Yeah. I think these are better probably for straight sippers. Tequila might be maybe a little bit better of a mixer. Maybe. Because it's a little bit more of a chameleon, if you will. This has almost too much character maybe for a margarita or anything like that.
It feels wasteful if you're going to be putting it in something like that with lots of sugar. And
this would be interesting probably. Yeah, obviously, an old-fashioned. But it would probably be good in like more of a spirit-forward drink.
Yes.
Yeah,
where you're getting that flavor first before all of the other things that are in the in the mix. And I don't even think you'd want to be putting this into I don't know. For me, I like the cocktails that only have, a small number of ingredients, 3-4 max, whereas the better cocktails for me, you're going to taste that spirit, and it's not mixed up with a bunch of other stuff.
Have you done it with your Topo Chico as a highball?
I have.
I imagine that's really nice.
It is. It's mineral water. I don't know that it adds or subtracts.
No, exactly. But I'm saying if you want to just like kind of chill it out and make it a little bit more of a long drink.
Yes.
Correct. So you use that without losing that tequila character.
It is interesting, just like in the other spirit category, how pick a brand and they've got 6 or 7 whiskeys, for instance, and they're all a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Here you got these. They're all a little bit different.
Yep.
More than a little in some cases.
Yeah. I like it. Mike, what do you think?
I like them. I don't know enough about it to know that what I like about it, but I think they're all sippers. I certainly think that first one would be really good in a cocktail. But it's again, it's different than tequila. Tequila to me is something you, if you're drinking it as shots, you're probably doing it wrong. And that's what a lot of people do with tequila.
Yeah. I mean, like if you took this and had it like with, I don't know, versus like a Casamigos. Casamigos is like super approachable, you know, and I could see why they're popular because it's really easy drinking and it doesn't really, I don't think it'll put anybody off. If you like spirits, you know, Casamigos like with the heavy hit of vanilla, especially on like the, on the silver, you know, it's just really not offensive. It's just, you know, it's just a good everyday drink, but this has more of what I'm into.
Right.
You know, if I'm going to drink straight spirits, I want more character and this has a lot of character.
You're a lot of character.
This is like that scene from Pulp Fiction, right?
Yep.
No. You don't have character.
You are
a character. There's a difference.
We could bottle you.
It's a big difference.
You know, there's a few people that I'm sure wouldn't mind that. Bottling me up and like, you know, like messaging, like Genie.
Boxing you up. Know,
throw me out to sea and just see what happens.
Pack you in a container. Dump you in the sea.
That's very nice. Very nice. Shall we round this out with what we're going to watch or what we want to watch?
I only have one thing that I'm going to watch that I know of. Just came out. My daughter, I think, has already binged through it. It is total pulp fare for the summer. It's season 2 of Outer Banks on Netflix.
Oh, my son's watching it. He started it last night. I talked to him today around 5 o'clock. I'm like, what episode are you on? Episode 9.
Yeah. it's my daughter, too. Yes.
It is absolute crap.
It is absolute crap.
It is crap.
But it was fun. I watched the first season, and I don't even know why I turned it on, and I got sucked in. It's like a soap opera.
Like a soap opera. It's a soap opera.
It is a soap opera. And so I'm assuming season 2 is going to be like a soap opera.
Oh, yeah. I watched the one episode where they make it. Did you watch it at all?
The new one? No, I haven't.
But they're in Nassau. And they're looking for the gold and all this craziness. I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. But whatever. Yeah.
That's the only thing that's on my radar that I know of. The only other thing, which I bring up to you guys, did you guys see the new trailer for Ghostbusters? The new Ghostbusters?
No, but I heard them talking about it on one of our favorite pods.
Yeah.
I don't know. How's it look?
I don't know either.
It's the kid from Stranger Things, right?
Kid from Stranger Things and Paul Rudd and... I don't know what this movie's going to be about. I don't hope it's not crapping on our dear friend Ghostbusters. Or hopefully it's a nice honoring of our childhood friend. I don't know. We'll see. Not sure yet. I don't go to movies, so I probably won't go to it, but I will probably watch it on TV.
Mike, anything? What's on the slate?
No, I don't have anything lined up. I mean, I write down what you guys are talking about and then try to put together some idea of when I can squeeze this stuff in. But
if you're going to go back and watch anything that we've watched, I think you would like Lupin if you can get past the subtitles. You got to watch it with the French because I think it loses a lot of character with the dubbing. And Mr. In Between, I think you would like.
Well, the subtitles doesn't bother me. I don't mind subtitles.
And you know what's great? You've said many times you're a visual reader, so you could read it and the visual is right there. Yep. It's right there for you.
It's actually, they built it in for me. Wasn't that nice?
Yeah. It's like reading a graphic novel with action, right? Absolutely. Look at it that way. But Mr. In Between, I think you should really check out. That's just a really, really neat show. The guy's great.
Who doesn't like a hitman?
I love the character.
Who doesn't like a hitman?
Oh, he's great. He's just so good. He's just funny. Some of the stuff is just, it's so dry. You know, there's some dark moments. There's some dark moments and it gets pretty, really dark at times. But, oh, it's good. My list. So... I want to go back. I want to finish Patriot. You know, other stuff pops up and it's like, oh, I lose track. But with those other shows, the currently one, since they're all like on a week to week, you know, I could just, you know, watch a half hour episode. It's kind of easy to, you know, to catch up. So I want to go back and watch Patriot. And there was a show I was watching on HBO. It was a Cinemax show with Carla Gugino called Jet, where she's like a master thief.
That showed up on my HBO what is
she?
Now. I see
I'm
that.
Sorry, what did you say she was?
It's called Jet and she's a master thief.
Master Thief, okay.
So I watched the first episode, and it was pretty good. I mean, it's pulp. It's not, you know, it's total pulp.
It ain't brain surgery.
No, it's okay. She's good. What's his name? Giancarlo Esposito. It was all right. I want to go back and check it out. And there is a show that just dropped a little while ago that I've been hearing about. It was I think it was like a YouTube thing. It's with the guy that plays the one Jackie Daytona character in What We Do in the Shadows. And it's called Garth Madrigan's Dark Place. It's supposed to be some weird spoofy comedy. I'll have to find the description. Yeah, it sounds bizarre. Let me get the description of it. Hang on. This parody series is an unearthed 80s horror drama complete with poor production values, awful dialogue, and hilarious violence. The series is set in a hospital in Romford, which is situated over the gates of hell.
What's it called?
It's called Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. And it's with some guy named Richard Ayoade, Matt Berry, Matthew Holness, Alice. I don't know who any of these people are except for Matt
Berry. Matt Berry.
Oh, Steve Merchant's in it?
Oh, he's funny.
Yeah, he is funny. And that's about the only people I could think of those two. But I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen a preview. But it's got a lot of buzz, and it could be kind of fun. And there's one movie I want to check out that I think I talked when we had Joshua Hatton on. It's called Only Lovers Left Alive. And it's like a vampire movie by Jim Jarmusch. So Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston play vampires.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah,
I
watched the trailer. The trailer looked really good. And I think he's like a rock and roller or whatever. So yeah. It looks kind of interesting. And Jarmusch is quirky. I kind of like Jim Jarmusch. He does some weird stuff. He's a very quirky guy. So I want to check that out. And it's available on Prime. So it's a freebie. So I'm in.
Cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff.
Well, we did it again.
Yes, we did.
We sure did.
We did it with we did it with Mezcal.
Yeah, Mezcal Mayhem.
Mezcal Mayhem. We have to thank our friends at Impex Beverages for the samples from the Mal de Amor Mezcaleria in Mexico, in the state of Oaxaca.
That's very good. They are delicious. They're really, really good.
We are pro Mezcal, even Mike.
Yeah, man. And we are pro Mal de Amor. And they got a restaurant, so we got to go, man. We
got
to
go. Yeah, and they got good. The bottles are cool.
Yeah, they are. They're really, really neat. Bottles are really... I like it. And
I have to say, Mezcal bottles are actually mostly the labels. Most brands are really good at it. They've got it down to a science. It's really good.
Don't go telling me that, though, because I'm a pretty shiny guy.
I know. Shiny, pretty. Baby.
Pretty shiny.
They will be putting fuel inside of bottles and sending it to me, and I'll be buying it because it's so pretty.
And I'm glad they didn't translate it, you know, because it translates to bad love.
Yeah.
You give bad love.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's right. We said that, right? Right, it's the Bon Jovi cover band's favorite mezcal.
Yep.
El amor es male, something like that. I don't know.
Wow. Episode 17, it was the one where Angelo sings. I didn't realize
and not that. Well.
I did not know
that's
that.
The mayhem.
Well. Did not know that.
That's the mayhem.
That's the mayhem.
That is the mayhem, correct. After a little mezcal. All right, boys. This was another good one for the books.
Yep.
Episode 17 is written in blood in the book of... what we watch when we drink.
Yep. Yes, correct. And what we do in the shadows. Lots of blood. Blood, blood, shadows. Blood.
All right. Don't forget to watch us where? Or listen to us where?
All right. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Audible, and wherever else you get your podcast. Or if you don't want to do any of that, just visit us at boozedancing.com and email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. And, you know, let us know what you guys have been watching and what you drink.
We'll catch you next time on episode 18, where we'll have more mayhem and probably less mezcal.
Yes, and the Olympics will be over, you think, by then?
I think so.
Who knows? It'll be going forever.
Who knows?
Might get delayed for COVID and go another 3 or 4 weeks.
Sounds good. All right, boys.
Cheers, all.
Cheers. Cheers.